can download a copy of the report themselves.
Saferjournalism.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Cassie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali. Appreciate you.
My guest has been Cassie Owens, the Philadelphia Program Manager with Free Press and the lead organizer of the Philadelphia Safer Journalism Project. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, host and executive producer of Rising Up with Sonali, an independently produced subscriber-supported program nationally syndicated to radio stations, free speech, TV, and podcast platforms.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Make sure to tune in on Wednesday, November 26th from 6 to 7 p.m. to vote for the president of the Youth Collective. We want this to be an unbiased, fair election, and that's why we need you to vote. But really, you should be biased. Biased towards me. Why? Well, we have my dear radio teacher, Jacob, here to tell you why you should vote for me.
Well, pretty much the greatest student in the history of existence. GPA is 100,000% out of four. How dare you vote for anybody else?
That is why you should vote for me, Elizabeth, for President of the Youth Collective. Thank you so much, and make sure to tune back in on November 26th, 6 to 7 p.m. to vote for me.
One, two, three, vote.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
World up, world up.
David D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Been wanting to talk to this individual for a while, especially when we saw the disturbing stories that emerged a couple of weeks ago involving the world of basketball and now sports in general. We're talking about betting in sports. Folks may recall, I want to say it was earlier this summer or maybe a few months ago, former basketball star Gilbert Arenas was arrested and was accused of participating in rigged poker games. And, you know, he was pumping out his chest and said he just rented out his house and knew nothing about it, yada, yada, yada. And we thought all that disappeared. After all, he no longer plays, and he's a podcaster. But lo and behold, a couple of weeks ago, we saw that there was 36 people arrested, including famed NBA coach Chauncey Billups, of the Portland Trail Blazers and basketball player Terry Rozier. And they were accused of participating in fixed poker games, and in the case of Terry Rozier, helping fix basketball games. And then, just as we thought that was disruptive enough, we started to hear very popular sports announcers like Stephen A. Smith being caught up in a web of a betting scandal of his own. And so we wanted to talk to Dave Zirin about this. If you follow sports, you know Dave Zirin is somebody who is key in the intersection of sports and politics. You know him for his work at Edge of Sports. You know him for his syndicated radio show that he does with basketball great Etan Thomas. So, Dave, I wanted to bring you on because not only because of these things, and I want to get your take on it, and I know you've written some pretty blistering articles that have netted responses from higher-ups, but you can't talk about sports now without there being an entire segment about what you should be thinking about betting. And it's so often and so much in your face that it's hard to not see sports from the lens of maybe this game is rigged. Maybe that call that we just saw the other night, a pass interference, is to make sure that a particular team, you know, goes up or down. And then with these scandals coming out and you're hearing words like organized crime and mafia and all that, that just underscores the suspicion. So where are we at with this sports and betting and, you know, and your take on some of these recent happenings?
Well, Davey, it's great to be here. I mean, one of the things is that it's overtaking sports. Our sports journalists are the new bookies. It's impossible to watch anything, enjoy anything, without being constantly bombarded with the idea that there is actually a better way to enjoy the game and a better way to have fun. And you're out of it if you're not also placing some bets as easily as you might like an Instagram post. Now, the deleterious effects of this are manifest. We know that there is a youth gambling epidemic taking place in this country right now. We know that the hotlines that people are calling to deal with gambling addiction are out of control and beyond what people can reasonably even hope to do. And in terms of the helpers, the people trying to help young people get off of this vicious cycle. And we know that it's now becoming a part of the lives of the players as well. And once that happens, and once stories like the ones you mentioned go more public, what happens then is that the sports world becomes like pro wrestling, and people fundamentally doubt what they are seeing and fundamentally doubt that that what's taking place is not predetermined, the results. And once people believe that the results are predetermined, that it is like pro wrestling, then the golden goose dies. And that's why pro sports for decades and decades and decades did things like ban the Hit King, Pete Rose, because they wanted to send the message that even the hint of impropriety could destroy the whole sport and therefore could never be tolerated. Now, impropriety is everywhere. And the worst fears of people like the late, the worst fears of the people like the late Bart Giamatti, who banned Pete Rose, I think really are coming to pass. It's the Wild West. It's an awful situation for the sports world. It's discredited a generation of sports journalists who have, I think, humiliated themselves on the altar of gambling money. It's also, Davey, undercut what was a historic period of sports resistance between 2012 and 2020 of athletes standing up and speaking out around issues concerning police brutality, racism, global justice. That's been undercut dramatically in the United States as well because of the amounts of money that we're talking about and the stakes of becoming like a Colin Kaepernick and getting kicked out of your sport. I mean, the salaries are exploding, the profits are exploding, and the sports are suffering. And I'll tell you where it's it's also getting really ugly, is the situation with the two baseball players, Clase and Ortiz, playing for the Cleveland Guardians, and the idea that they were engaging in rigging prop bets is the next wild frontier that we're going to have to deal with here. For folks who don't know, a prop bet is short for a proposition bet. That's a bet that has nothing to do with the outcome of the games, but is instead intrinsically connected to what happens in the next play. It's like you're going to bet on whether the next pitch is a ball or is a strike. Now, think for a second, Davey. There are a lot of things about this Ortiz-Clase story that I have to tell you. First of all, how difficult would it be to even tell if somebody is cheating without there being a whistleblower on, is the next pitch a ball or a strike? You know, so it opens the door up for all kinds of cheating. Second thing that's really important is, do you know the bets that these players who make millions of dollars a year were doing? Like $5,000 bets, Davey. Now, some of your listeners, and myself included, might think that $5,000 is a nice chunk of change. But imagine risking a $4.5 million a year salary for $5,000. And why do they do that? Why would an athlete do that? Well, who knows with regards to organized crime, which you mentioned. We don't know what the specter of violence could be around some of these decisions. But I'll tell you what I think it is, Davey. Gambling in pro sports by athletes has been going on as long as there's been pro sports. You know, I'm talking about people playing cards on the plane, playing dice on the bus, betting on who can throw the most sunflower seeds into a little jar while you're sitting in the dugout. And that's because players have disposable income, a general lack of impulse control, and a lot of downtime. That's just a feature of being a pro athlete. And also, you're one of the most competitive people probably that you know, if you've made it to that point. So all of that breeds a culture of penny ante gambling. Now, that's fine. Like I said, the stories about Michael Jordan alone doing stuff like this could fill a whole book.
Yeah, I was going to mention Michael Jordan.
Right. But when you integrate that mentality of the pro sports athlete and the penny ante gambling, when you integrate that with this multi-billion dollar app system where everybody's gambling, I mean, it is a recipe for absolute disaster. And I think the way the league is going to deal with it, the leagues, instead of standing up to it, Davey, and being like, wow, maybe this is actually bad for our sports. Maybe the money is not as important as the integrity of the game. Well, you know, cue the laughter. You know what I'm saying? The next time a sports executive says integrity is more important than money will be the next time, you know, moon people come down to walk on the earth. I mean, give me a break. But
there are several things.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, sir. Sorry.
There are several things at play. Dave Zirin is our guest talking about gambling in sports. First, I want to go back to the type of firewalls you described that were put up. And I want to find out when those firewalls came down.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, the major sports teams did not want to have a team play in Vegas, either for the optics or the reality that, hey, you're going to be too close to the fire and we don't want no parts of it. And we saw the Raiders fight and fight and fight and fight, and finally they broke through with the help of many powerful people in the league, including Jerry Jones of the Cowboys, and they got that stadium there. And when you look at that stadium, it's like, you know, it's always filled, but it's always filled with teams from the opposite, you know, from that aren't Raider fans. But what it said to me is like, okay, you struck a gold mine there, but what I started to see and hear is that they were selling packages, you know, to other cities. Like, if you're going to play the Steelers in Las Vegas, you can come here and stay at, you know, Hotel X, and we'll give you a show, and you can be a high-stakes roller, and then on Sunday you can go to the game. So that fire that we were trying to keep the leagues away from suddenly was there, because now you're aggressively selling packages to sports fans to come to Vegas, spend your money, gamble, and then go see the game. I mean, it was just a matter of time, in my opinion, before those tentacles were going to find their way into the league. The second thing that we started to see, a very fun game, which is fantasy football, is now almost been institutionalized on every sports channel, every sports show. They talk about it. You can gamble on it, all these sort of things. So from you following this, when did those walls start to fall? And when did those tentacles start to reach into the league where you can't avoid having these conversations? Then I have some questions about organized crime.
Yeah, 2014 is when Adam Silver wrote an op-ed in the New York Times. That's the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, supporting a Supreme Court decision to legalize sports gambling.
So this went to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and it, with the support, the legal support, the, you know, amicus briefs, the whole thing of the leagues themselves, with Adam Silver as kind of the spokesperson of all the sports leagues. Now, their argument at the time was so interesting, Davey, because it was an argument that there were more than a few people sympathetic to. You know, people that were sympathetic to the argument that prohibition is bad. You know, all it does is push illegal activity underground. It's much easier to tell who's cheating and who's not if it's all above board and legal. That's what they said. And to a lot of folks, particularly folks who, you know, aren't into the idea of making illegal, you know, certain vices, you know, from alcohol in the 1920s to drug war and legalization, you know, a lot of people use that template for this and just said, yeah, legalization is good. We'll be able to know who cheaters are more easily. That argument now looks farcical, Davey.
Yeah.
And maybe one size doesn't fit all. And maybe alcohol isn't drugs, isn't gambling. Maybe we actually have to have more nuance in our thinking and think about these things individually. Now, the issue with gambling in all of this is that what it does is that it creates in sports what I'm sure you've heard the phrase, a crime of opportunity. Like, if I leave my car unlocked with a computer inside of it, it's much more likely to get stolen than somebody who goes by my house and thinks, I bet there's a laptop in there. I'm going to break in and steal it. You know, it's a crime of opportunity. All sports gambling does is created crimes of opportunities across the landscape. So easy. Like, wait a minute. You mean all I have to do is throw a ball instead of a strike? And I can get paid $5,000. I bet I can get away with that. Or the individual, like my son, who's a high school student, he says, like, there are bookies all over his school now. Like, kids who have their parents' FanDuel accounts. We're raising a generation of bookies with this stuff to prey on kids who have no impulse control, no ability to handle their own finances, and, you know, get in over their heads really quickly, and all of a sudden are dealing with a different kind of addiction issue than what would occur with either drugs or alcohol. It's a different beast, but it can be just as brutal and just as parasitic. And so this is the situation we're dealing. And I'll say one other thing is too. It's like for them to say there will be less cheating because everything will be above board. I mean, that just doesn't work, man. I mean, you know what that's like saying? That's like saying I'm going to build a city made up of only vegetarians, and every city is going to have steak in the refrigerator, because that's the way we're going to be able to monitor if people stay vegetarians.
Well, you know, Dave, as you were talking, I was thinking to myself, the irony of that, if you follow this prohibition thing, then why not just make, steroids and other type of enhancement drugs legal then? Right, this way,
yeah.
you can just monitor it, right? It won't go in the backyard somewhere and take on different names. But that's either here nor there. Let me come back to a couple of things. One, how much money is being made by these companies? Because that's what really seems to be driving this, is one, there's a lot of money. And then two, with these major companies, are shadowy figures, aka organized crime, involved with these institutions that, you know, that they have their tentacles involved with that?
Well, you know, it's so interesting. Like, what they said back in 2014, Adam Silver and the other commissioners, is that legalizing gambling would push away organized crime. Again, I have to tell you, the naivete, looking back, is ridiculous. Because where does organized crime really fester? When there's money to be made and when there's an opportunity for parasitic behavior. Now, this has created an incredible opening for parasitic behavior. Parasitic on young people, parasitic on people with gambling problems, parasitic on people with impulse control. The mob has flocked to this like nobody's business. And you know this when you look at some of, and I've read some of the indictments and affidavits that have gone into some of the arrests, like the one of Chauncey Billups of the Portland Trailblazers. And it's amazing, like, how integrated organized crime is with the idea of getting players to play ball on these prop bets. It's there for them to do, and they're taking full advantage of it at the margins. And here's the thing. I just said at the margins to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
The margins is what we know about right now. But every person who I've talked to said that however widespread we think it is, in terms of players maybe chiseling a little bit at the ends or the amount of addiction, like all of the negative things we've discussed, as bad as we might think it is, it's worse.
You know, Dave, as you were talking, Dave Zirin, talking about gambling and sports, et cetera, et cetera, Chuck D, who's a sports enthusiast, used to famously point out the parallels between the music industry and the sports industry. Said, you know, they're cut from the same cloth, they're two sides to the same coin, they're parallel industries, you know, your peers that are in the music industry or your peers that are also in sports. So he's always made that connection. And there are a number of books, you know, important books that I would tell people to read. Hitman is one. Another one is The Autobiography of Black Jazz. Jazz and Justice by Gerald Horn is another one. And in there, you read about the shadowy doings of organized crime, the extortion that takes place with very popular musicians, the brutality that many have gone through. You see that in the jazz world and in others, you know. So to your point, Dave, when there's money to be made, all of a sudden there is somebody that's like, hey, man, I heard you just got a contract. You know, you come to my city, you know, I want half. You know, those type of things did happen and are happening in many instances. And so we're not talking about something that suddenly people go, you know, that's baseball. We're going to leave that alone. We have heard in the past about sports stars who show up and it's like, man, so-and-so just got a $50 million deal and being in certain cities and being extorted. You know, now those stories have often been tamped down, but we heard it with hockey players and others. But to your point about crime of opportunity, now I don't have to go up and take their salary. Now I can just be like, you know, several things come to play. One, maybe you have an illegal gun that you got from a man. In exchange, I'm going to need you to, you know, do these bets. You came to the city and we got you some extracurricular activity, you know, in your hotel room for that night. I'm going to need you to do that. Or you may just have the strong arming. In other words, these folks just didn't disappear. And if there's millions and billions to be made with gambling being added legally, of course, you're going to have people as you said, that are going to be parasitic. So what I haven't heard are the safeguards, the type of steps to make sure that people are insulated, transparency. And then let me close with this. There was a documentary that came out. It was part of the, I want to say not the AN1 series, but there's a certain name that they have on Netflix, but it talked about the ref,
Tim Donaghy. Yep.
Tim Donaghy. And so, you know, they show in the documentary, like, yo, he was throwing basketball games. He was fixing them, all this stuff. He went to jail or got arrested. Organized crime was definitely all up in the mix, the whole nine. He started in the documentary, names of current refs were prominently featured. Scott Forrester is one of the main ones. So when I saw that documentary and it first came out, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, they're going to be talking about this all over. First take, silence. You know, the local sports stations here, silence. Nobody's called in. Nobody's talking about it. It was almost like, we're not going to talk about this. And I'm like, you just have a major documentary that is naming people who are currently in the league, and nobody's talking about that. Now, on one hand, you could say the league wants no parts of this, or they understand that their brand is going to get tarnished. They were trying to prevent that from happening. Now you see the brand is really tarnished, but even in the midst of all that, we still aren't hearing about the fixing of games with these refs. And it's like, you know, it just seems like one big cluster. I'm not going to use the word that I want to say, but man, it's like, has the ship already left has the ship already sailed? Are we already in a mess? Are sports already just fixed? Because that's how it's starting to look like right now.
Yeah, no, I think the ship has sailed unless there's a scandal, the likes of which can crack the whole thing open. And, you know, I think that's inevitable. So maybe the ship has sailed, Davey, but the ship can also sink.
Mm. You wrote an article. Well, first of all, the Tim Donaghy thing, did you notice that there was that silence? The Tim, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. No, there wasn't.
Any word on that? Anything? Anybody say anything? No.
Because you don't want to look too much underneath the hood of the car, you know? I mean, it's unfortunately sports is treated like the company store, you know, as opposed to something that people have actually feel like they need to safeguard and guardian and the like.
The thing that I said about the extortion and organized crime, what have you heard over the years? I mentioned the two books in looking at the music industry, Chuck saying that the parallels between music and sports is always been there. If they're doing it in music, why wouldn't they do it in sports?
That's the right question. And it's the nature, not just of the parasitic business, but of the fact that it's usually people who come up from hard scrabble backgrounds who are able to succeed and are then therefore also the most vulnerable. I mean, and that's capitalism right there. And capitalism in its rawest form, I think, is you can look at it right now in the form of people placing bets on these apps as easily as they're liking a Facebook post.
With the case with Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier, where does that stand now in terms of, we saw their faces even though there were 36 arrests, so people famously pointed out, why are we just seeing them and not the mob figures that you arrested? Was this like kind of a thing, especially because it's happening under the Trump watch?
Yeah.
Does it have his fingerprints? Yeah, does it have his fingerprints in terms of what's being exposed and not being exposed? What's the deal with that?
No, the Trump administration is an administration built on political retribution. The NBA is seen as an enemy league. While this investigation has been going on since the Biden years, the fact that they chose the first week of the NBA season to make this announcement, it was clearly an effort to harm the league. And it's disgusting. But this is how government is done right now. And I think in this case as well, it's complicated because you got to separate the Chauncey Billups stuff with the mafia card games, because honestly, these mafia smokers with pro athletes has been going on as long as there's been pro sports. You know, it's ugly, but it's part of the landscape, always has been. The stuff with Terry Rozier is about trying to clamp down on the free speech of players and their ability to even talk to people. Like, they want to say it's insider trading if you say to a friend, oh, I don't think I'm going to play tonight. Because it is true that if you tell a friend, oh, I don't think I can play tonight, they could probably find a prop bet that says Terry Rozier will play less than 5 minutes tonight. So everything is monetized.
Right.
And if so what they have to do is eliminate these prop bets first and foremost. But hopefully,
are the prop bets like kind of legal? Like I can call up like one of these companies and
online with your fingers. It's not, you don't have to call anybody. It's like you're just, you know, trolling on your phone on the apps. It's just that quick, just that easy, hooked right up to your credit card.
Wow. You know, Dave, as you were talking, I'm thinking to myself, we have a lot of people who have been amplified as influencers, and they make quick money. I can do content. I can make money, you know, pay, you know, I'm online, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the things with the sporting things is that the way it's presented to the public in a lot of spaces is almost like the way that we see the stock market, which is to me like another big gambling hub. We have an analyst who comes on and goes, hey, Dave Zirin, you know, if you buy AI stock, you know, based upon the fact that they moved this CEO to the back and this one to the front, and they now have a deal with China in place, this will probably pay off next year. You know, put your money on, you know, AI stock number one, right? So we have these analyses, and now we're starting to hear when they cover the betting, it's not just giving the line, but it's like somebody coming in and going, well, so-and-so has a knee injury, so-and-so, this coach is coming in. So you're giving this analysis, which means that now you have folks who are saying, maybe I can make some money being a sports analyst for the sake of betting, being an influence in that right. If I follow my favorite sports analyst, you know, who is now gearing me to make a prop bet or make a bet on the outcome of a game, there's money to be made just in the monetization aspect of it being online and you using social media as a perch to communicate.
It's the right question, man. But this is like I keep telling you, Davey, this is the Wild West. And unless we figure out how to tame this landscape, the sports world's going to suffer indefinitely.
As we close out, where do you see things going? What do you think people could do?
No, I don't think people can do anything except be vigilant to keep your kids off of this stuff because it's pure poison, and to just make sure that the vigilance continues because people have to just walk away from organized sports. That's the tragedy of this. They're killing their own golden goose, and they don't seem to care.
Wow.
It's too dangerous. I love sports. I love watching them. I love enjoying them, all the rest of it. But if a condition of me watching it with my kids is them getting hooked on something this destructive, then, you know, that creates a different kind of question for sure.
Or us seeing a game and realizing
and not knowing what's true and what's real and what's not.
We will see where things land in a year from now. You know, if sports will be sports or will it go the way of the WWE? And the only way that you can maybe play sports with an honest outcome is to play a video game.
The right question.
Dave Zirin, we appreciate you coming on. How can people follow you?
Oh, just, you know, all the social medias except Twitter, which I am no longer on. But just go to @edgeofsports and you'll find me.
There you have it. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Today, we want to take another deep dive into the economy and look at it from another angle. As you know, a lot of this work we will have to do ourselves. the reason why we have a current administration that has shuttered a lot of the guardrails, that have shuttered a lot of the oversight committees and institutions. And so if 1,000 people lost their jobs, we don't know, at least from this current administration. They might tell you everything is looking hunky-dory and it's rosy. They'll tell you that prices are going down and that the economy is thriving. And you're looking outside to your neighbors and your family and friends and you're saying that's not their reality, but how do you have a way to prove it? Well, luckily there are organizations that are up and about. Among them is an organization called Unrig Our Economy. And this afternoon, we have the pleasure of talking to the managing director, Katie Gladstone. Unrig Our Economy is a campaign to fix the rules of our economy, to make it work for working people. They're fighting for working Americans and holding corporations and their wealthy executives and politicians who enable them accountable. That sounds like a tall order, Katie Gladstone. You're trying to slay a dragon with a pebble, some might say. But that is the task at hand, and we're glad that there are folks like you that are willing to do it. I gave a brief synopsis. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about Unrig the Economy? When did you all start, and how far along on this fight are you?
I would love to, and so nice to meet you, and thank you so much for having me on today to talk about these very important issues. As you mentioned, costs are rising for every American right now, and Republicans in Congress have really created an affordability crisis for us. So excited to talk about the work that we're doing with Unrig Our Economy to kind of track those rising prices so that people do have real information about how their everyday costs actually are going up. Unrig Our Economy was started before, you know, as Republicans were gearing up to pass this enormous tax law earlier this year. We knew that as part of this tax law, Republicans would prioritize tax breaks for very wealthy individuals and big corporations over everyday working Americans. And so we started this campaign to try to convince Republican members of Congress to vote against the tax bill as it was at the time, and to really prioritize their constituents over billionaires and corporations. Obviously, that didn't happen. Republicans did chose to vote for that law, which put a lot of really bad policies for American families into practice, from, you know, the biggest cut to Medicaid in American history to cutting other critical programs that families rely on, like food stamps. And now our work continues as Republicans continue to prioritize the ultra-rich over everyday families. Right now, that, you know, Republicans are refusing to make healthcare affordable for families. And all these costs are kind of laddering up to create a situation where, you know, working families once tried to get ahead as best they could in the American economy. And now that's just completely off the table and are now focused on figuring out how to put food on their table every day.
Katie Gladstone is our guest from Unrig the Economy. As you were talking, Katie, I was thinking, you know, so many of us have been cultivated to get our information from sources that essentially are gaslighting us or are in positions where their reality is starkly different from ours. I always like to tell the story of listening to a local newscaster talk about why they didn't think housing was such a bad idea, like everybody can put 20% down, you know, for a down payment, it's no big deal. And I thought it was outrageous when that was mentioned, because I personally knew that newscaster was making $1 million a year. You see what I'm saying? So to sit there and talk to working class and poor people, like, you know, can't you get your parents to sign for the loan? What do you mean? Eggs are $12? I mean, save up. It's no big deal. No, it's no big deal when you have $1 million. But if many of us are working pretty hard and not having any substantial income, the scenario that you described is one that is you know, the reality that many people are feeling, but it's not reflected in the information watering hole that people go to. The billionaires that control social media don't see it. The people on legacy media who are making, you know, tons of money don't see it. And so it's going to be up to us talking to each other to affirm our realities. And it's going to be up to us to figure out how to amplify those concerns. Otherwise, we can essentially be gaslit and made to think that maybe it's my fault I can't afford $1 million home. You know, maybe we did something wrong versus seeing that this is a widespread scenario.
100%. You know, I think that's everything. I agree with everything you're saying. And that's one reason why here at Unrig Our Economy, we've actually created a tool based on data from historical trends, real-time supplier data, and market analysis. So facts, in other words, to track rising costs of everyday grocery items in real time. Because when we live in an environment right now where, you know, we hear from elected officials, right now we're hearing from Republicans just last week that egg prices are down, right? Like, we know that that's not true because we go to the grocery store and we buy eggs every day. So we created this tool called don'tinflateourplates.com. Again, that's don'tinflateourplates.com, which is a website that tracks rising food costs in real time and then connects those rising costs directly to the policy choices that Republicans in Congress have made. This is a, you know, it's a website, right? So it's free and very easy for anybody to use. So I would encourage folks to check that out if and when they go to the grocery store and they're seeing that their reality is very different from what politicians in Congress have claimed it to be. And the idea for this came about because Republicans promised us that they would lower costs, right? But in fact, they've done exactly the opposite. They've passed things like tariffs. Actually, Republicans in Congress have voted to support tariffs multiple times. And like we just talked about, people's premiums are now going up, in some cases even doubling or tripling because Republicans in Congress are refusing to make healthcare affordable. So working people are struggling now more than ever and feeling like they don't know what to do. So because Republican politicians are kind of trying to mitigate that reality and make people feel like prices are fine, Republicans are bringing costs down, we know that's not real. We wanted to create a tool that validates the way what people's lived experience actually is. So that's what don'tinflateourplates.com does.
You mentioned a lot about Republicans, and I think with the current administration, some of the things you describe are pretty clear for a lot of folks. But I don't want to let Democrats off the hook. You know, we're here in California. We're here in a city like Oakland. This is all blue. And it's on their watch that we saw housing prices go up. It's on their watch we're seeing a homeless crisis because of that. It's on their watch that we're seeing a lot of things become unaffordable for folks. And it's done maybe with a smile. It's done with a smoothness. But what is missing is them amplifying and directly addressing the plight of the poor. You often don't hear folks from our party say poor folks. You know, they say middle class. What does that mean? Because middle class here might mean making $80,000 a year, which is not the reality for many people who, you know, work some what they think are good jobs. So I'm asking this and I'm raising this issue because, yes, we definitely need immediate relief from the tariffs and things that you described. But the quote-unquote neoliberal policies that have often been associated with Democrats have massively contributed to this ascension of unaffordability. So how do we kind of really get to the root of what's going on so that we don't have these problems no matter who's in office? And I'll just kind of toss this out for people trying to follow. You know, there's a belief that housing should be a right. And that smacks, you know, in stark opposition to those who feel that housing should be an investment that allows you to make money, which means that you have a lot of people, whether they're conservative or left-leaning, who, you know, pride themselves on being able to flip houses and keep houses vacant until they can appreciate more, and then they sell them, and they're saying, this is my hustle. Meanwhile, you got a tent, you know, several tents in your, you know, right across the street with people talking about there's no place for them to live. So how do we kind of really dig down to this, and do you see any of the policies that Democrats have been doing, especially in blue states like ours, that would really have to, where this tool would really bring out some patterns that need to be corrected with them as well?
Yeah, look, I think it's a really important point that you're making. And holding our elected officials accountable should be to prioritize us, you know, working people in this country, and not billionaires, not big corporations, not, you know, the Amazons of the world. I think should be a priority for us, no matter who our elected officials are, no matter who's in office. The reason that I'm talking so much about Republicans right now is that they control all three branches of government right now, right? So they actually have an opportunity to make life more affordable for Americans, right, to pass policies that would uphold their promise to bring down costs. And they haven't done that. In fact, they've made life more expensive for us in the last year that they've held those three branches, right? They've, again, voted to support tariffs multiple times that are making things more expensive for us, the consumer, when we go to the grocery store. They voted to cut Medicaid by historic numbers. Millions of Americans rely on Medicaid to be able to afford healthcare, to be able to afford nursing home care and elder care. Critical program that's now facing historic cuts because Republicans have made that choice when they've been in office. They've cut SNAP. They've cut the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which provides food assistance for millions of families across this country. And right now they are, they're making healthcare more affordable. Like I said earlier, you know, all across this country right now, people are getting letters in the mail saying their health insurance premiums are going up. That's because Republicans have refused to pass tax credit extensions for the ACA. And this is an issue that Democrats have actually recently showed us that they stand up for. In the recent shutdown fight, Democrats wanted to pass permanent extensions for the Affordable Care Act that would make healthcare more affordable. Republicans are refusing to do that. So, to your point, I think we have a real responsibility as citizens to tell our elected officials what we need, and then hold them accountable to fighting for those policies for us. That's true whether your elected official is a Democrat, whether your elected official is a Republican. Right now, because Republicans, again, hold all three branches of government, they're the people who are in a position of power to be able to bring down costs for us.
Appreciate that. That's our guest, Katie Gladstone from Unrig the Economy. You know, just a couple of things. One, if, say, our governor, Gavin Newsom, is to look at your website, see these trends, being the governor of the state, would he be able to look at this and then be able to apply some things from the state side with resources to say, you know what, I didn't realize this, but we might be able to counter tariffs by doing something that is imaginative or creative, or is something that he has in his arsenal that he hasn't used? Will those folks in power in places where they do control, at least locally or statewide, are they going to be able to use these tools and maybe make a dent in some of the challenges we have?
Absolutely. I mean, this website, don'tinflateourplace.com, tracks how much the price of free grocery staples, beef, eggs, and coffee, has gone up literally in California, in other states in America too, because we track that on a state-by-state basis, but in California, every single day. So if Gavin Newsom wants to see how much the price of eggs has risen in the last year, he can go to don'tinflateourplace.com and look and see that the price of eggs in California has gone up by $2.59 in the last year. If you are interested in how much the price of beef has gone up in California, you can go to don'tinflateourplace.com and see that it's gone up you know, by 4.72% in the past 257 days. So whether you're Gavin Newsom, whether you're somebody living in California, you can go to this website at any time and it tracks that information in real time, you know, hour by hour, minute by minute, to see how much those prices have gone up so that we can all recognize that this is the reality that we're living in right now, that the cost of grocery store staples that we want to be able to put on our tables for our families every single day are going up because of these policies, and that there is an urgent need to pass policies that address that crisis.
We appreciate that. I know, Katie, your time is short. So again, let people know how they can get a hold of your website and, you know, and any action steps that you want our listeners to take once they have that information.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again for having me on. It's been really great to talk to you. My name is Katie Gladstone. I'm the managing director for Unrig Our Economy. If you want to check out more about Unrig Our Economy, you can go to our website, unrigoureconomy.com. And the tool that I've been talking about today is called don'tinflateourplates.com, spelled don'tinflateourplates.com. Thanks so much.
There you have it. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. Ralph for now. Peace.
You know, with the food and rent going up there, man, it's becoming a day-to-day hassle just to survive. You see, inflation and taxation has taken over our great nation. People, stop what you're doing and listen to what I have to say. Inflation is in the nation, and it's about to put us all away. I can see a depression coming on, but like most of you, I hope that I'm wrong. With the money they pay a man to live on, how long can he carry on? I said, inflation, why don't you get out the nation? Already in the land, and even then, poor people didn't stand a chance. Food keeps going up, ain't never coming down. Pretty soon there won't be no one around. Inflation, why don't you get out the nation? Taxation can't help the situation. Now people, what you're doing and listen to what I have to say. Cause inflation is in the nation and it's about to put us all away. I said, inflation, why don't you get out the nation? Foreign relations can't help the communication. In the land, and even then, poor people didn't stand the chance. Food keeps going up, ain't never coming down. Pretty soon there won't be no one around. Inflation, why don't you get out the nation? Foreign relations, bad communication.
Hard Knock Radio, East, West, North, South, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo, it's It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side, learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
Whether or not you believe in karma, prepare for the end of all dogma. Half the Atlas act backwards, spinning in massive flames, and we trapped in a blaze without a drop of agua. End of the human saga, it's not a drama novella. Maga tops and cops in armor, better hug moms and abuela. Churches, synagogues, and mosques are bombed with Krylon and Molotov. Civilians full of fear and full of faith and fully armed. Blast holes in holy places, disgrace in the names of God. Nothing sacred, blatant hatred in a nation that's truly scarred. Down to the marrow, the Wild West, a broken arrow. Crimson river since the colonies, innocent blood's mahogany. People treated as property, keep eyes on a sparrow. Still swinging from gallows and still babbling to pharaohs. Low by tobacco mixed with an endo, reading my tarot by the window, hoping my smoking prayers reach my murder kinfolk in limbo. Manhattan, Minneapolis, Oakland, the Caribbean. Beyond the borders we living and tired of breathing all of this tyranny. My question is, how we gonna move forward? If tyranny is law and revolution in order? My question is, how we gonna move forward? If tyranny is law, revolution's in order? There's no promise of drinking water, there's no order. Now we turn people away from our border, snatch up their children. What they ages, they get torn from the loving arms of they pops and moms and locked in cages. And in private prisons, people are products, the profits outrageous. So play this Rico P, original prophet to rage. Apocalyptic days upon us like piranhas. Fear is a plague, is contagious. Some pray to their AKs like Adonis, like it's God. And they are modern, mortal martyr minutes to final marching orders. They automatics for immaculate slaughter. Dressed in black, we mourn the horror show. Depression overload, mausoleums overflowing. Prescription overdose, murderers in overcoats and psychopaths and tie knot. Got the population comatose and crumbling like dry rot. And why not when crime pays and a politician's
freedom? Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana.
This is Dr. Caldicott talking on 90.7 FM KBOO. You all realise how terribly important this radio station is now that the federal government is trying to cut funds for national public radio. And you all realise that the real truth only comes out of public radio and that all the rest of the media is compromised and represents the corporations who are destroying the earth. So you absolutely have to support KBOO. With lots of money now, it's imperative, and you all know that.
This is Bird Note. In spring and summer, yellow warblers sing from treetops in city parks and stream sides from Mexico to Canada. These lemon yellow birds especially love willow trees near running water, perfect for building a nest and finding food. Males have red streaks on their breasts. In some areas of the Caribbean and Central America, the males may also have chestnut-colored hoods or caps. Females are a shade paler yellow and have unstreaked breasts. The sexes split up nesting duties. The female incubates the eggs, while the male brings food for his mate and chicks. Though common, yellow warblers face imminent challenges. Over time, yellow warbler populations have adapted genetically to their local climates. That makes them vulnerable to environmental shifts, which could cause the species to lose much of its breeding range in the U.S. by 2080. Yellow warbler chicks are at risk during spring heat waves, and wildfires can destroy trees along stream banks. So addressing climate change means creating a more sustainable future for ourselves, but also keeping our most familiar and beloved birds around too. For BirdNote, I'm Ariana Rimmel. A special thank you to artist Heidi Stavrevsky for designing our 20th anniversary logo, which beautifully captures two decades of BirdNote storytelling. See the design at birdnote.org.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune into KBOO every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Queery. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
She's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Queery